Music CDs available.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Daily Cafe, located 902 Northwest 13th Street in Portland, and serving breakfast and lunch daily in the Pearl. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located 2727 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland, open 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. daily and serving cornmeal crust pizza. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now. Galactic stars down to Avenue. The revenue of all is an obstacle.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Saturday, September 23rd at the Jade Apano Multicultural Space in Portland. The East Portland Arts and Literary Festival is a full-day festival led by artists of color exploring what it means to immigrate, migrate, and find home. The festival will include visual art, film, performances, storytelling, plus a book and craft fair with local writers and creators. Again, that's the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Saturday, September 23rd, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Jade Apano Multicultural Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community.
Hey KBOO listeners, this is Nick Deasy, and thank you for tuning in to Keeping It Real. Every first Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m., and every fifth Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Members like yourself are what keeps this great show going. If you are not a member now, you can become one by going to kboo.fm. Thank you for tuning in.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Talking Earth. I'm your host tonight, Camille Rose. I'm here with my guest that I am so excited about, Moss Angel. Hi, Moss.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
How are you feeling about this rain that suddenly was thrust upon us?
I love it. I love it so much.
I think a lot of us are feeling pretty thankful, especially after being bogged in by smoke for so long.
And oh my gosh, yeah.
Worrying about the gorge and all of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, given horrible, like, oppressive heat or just smoke filling my lungs, I'm gonna take rain.
Yep.
yep. I moved to Portland expecting rain. I did not expect to be sweating through like all of my clothes, and I did not expect to be choking on smoke. Right. So I'm prepared for this. This is nice.
Yeah, I think it's a little more what we were all expecting for sure. Moss is here to they are the author of 5 books, the most recent of which come out of their Sea Witch series, and that's what we're going to focus on tonight. I guess you have some reading for us?
Yeah, go figure. I'm a writer, and I came here on this show
Strange.
To read things from my books. What?
Weird.
Yeah. Should I read a piece?
I would love that.
Okay, so this is a piece from Sea Witch Volume 1. And it is sort of my, I think of it as kind of like the good introduction to Sea Witch. It's called Sea Witch 1 and 2. When I was living in Sea Witch, the sand held me on bright mornings. Small walls of it pressed on my sides and back, and I pressed small walls of it in return with each breath. Species unfamiliar with Sea Witch should know 3 things about her. 1. She is a monster, and this would always be the case in a world that had created the idea of monsters to use to describe things like her. 2. She cries at television shows about other monsters. 3. Long periods of time can pass when no one tells you that you are worthwhile, and long periods of time can pass when you don't understand the words of those who are telling you. It's difficult to know the difference. When I was living in Sea Witch, I was also a monster. When I was living in Sea Witch, I saw a television show about a little girl who put her dolls in a duffel bag with 2 sandwiches in case of an emergency. Her mother worried about her when she found the bag, because she knew her daughter would someday run away. This was not what the girl pictured when she made the bag, but it was what she ended up using it for. The mother did not confront her daughter about it, because she knew her daughter was a monster, and she knew that real monsters have no mothers. When I was living in Sea Witch, I got this television show tattooed on my arms and hands because it explained my life to others who wondered why I would live in a place like Sea Witch. When I was living in Sea Witch, sleep came when it did and disappeared later, and hunger was similar. There's no cause and effect in Sea Witch, and everything happens at once. I was born in Sea Witch, even though I wasn't, and I'm still in Sea Witch, even though I am not. When I was living in Sea Witch, people murdered her every day. Monsters exist to be slain, which is a word for murder that is mostly used for monsters. When I was living in Sea Witch, I had more friends, all of whom lived in Sea Witches of their own. Crying is a kind of involuntary prayer we have in Sea Witch, where the sea comes from your eyes, which is a place you receive light in order to understand it. When I was living in Sea Witch, I never understood light, and I still don't. This hasn't changed about me. When I was living in Sea Witch, I wrote a poem that everyone in Sea Witch loved. I won't tell you which one, because it doesn't matter which one. Think of any one of them, and that's the one. When I was living in Sea Witch, I put a sign above the entrance that said, "There is a dead thing between my legs, and I am naming myself Sarah." I spent the rest of the day pushing crows underwater. You do not get to come to Sea Witch. I will never let you in.
Wow, what a world that creates. So talk to me about, what is this project about? What world have you just created for us?
So this project is my attempt to sort of create a trans mythology, a sort of anti-capitalist, radical, like occult trans mythology. Basically, I wanted to deliver it in a way that where the structure sort of represented the multifaceted, confusing, contradictory nature of what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, all of those things are, when you inhabit them, they're very confusing and they're very mixed up. And I didn't want to just limit it to, okay, this is a novel, you know, right. Or even this is a book of poems, because I felt like there was a lot more I had to bring to it than I could really fit in a book of poems.
Right. So you wouldn't consider this necessarily a book of poetry then?
I wouldn't. I actually, I started writing Sea Witch after a few different things happened. One of which was I was having a conversation with a poet friend of mine who lived in New York. I was visiting New York, and she was blurbing my book. She was blurbing my book that came out last year, Careful Mountain, and she said, she said, so I have a question for you. I really like your writing. Why poetry? Why write poetry? And my answer to that was something like, well, because poetry gives me a lot of freedom to do kind of whatever I want. And then I realized that I really didn't have a why poetry, you know, basically right. Like poetry, I was using poetry sort of as an other category for literature. And I realized that if I could shed what I was really headed towards was sort of shedding the genre of poetry and moving towards something that was kind of more in between.
Right.
I think there's a lot of like hybrid poetry fiction that exists, and I really enjoy that work, and that's some of the stuff that informs my work the most and always has.
Right.
I think as I was trying to think about how to represent sort of the political things and the gender things and the magic things, I was sort of moving towards, I've heard the word genre queer.
Like gender queer.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Would you like to bring us another piece of this mythological world?
I'd love to. So this is another little fragment of what life is like in Sea Witch. This is also from Sea Witch Volume 1, from the first book. Sea Witch 6. In Sea Witch, I never knew when I was having sex. Some bodies don't lend themselves to a clear separation of beginning or end. And in some bodies, that separation is too great. Exhausting, even. Mine has always been some combination of both. Sex happens in Sea Witch by taking turns. Each participant gets a turn, followed by the other participant's turn. Turns can look like anything and can take any amount of time. Whole months have been spent on a single turn. A turn can be a pause, the drawing of certain symbols in mud, or nearly endless tears. Most of my turns in Sea Witch looked the same, creating sound as quietly as possible near my lover's hair or skin. If there's no sound to be made or hair or skin to be found in the particular bodies we are inhabiting, I'm usually satisfied with anything I can connect to the concept of closest. This is why my thoughts are shaped the way they are now. Why draw symbols when you can use all of who you are? When you can act as one yourself. The following is a list of facts about my time in Sea Witch. 1. When I was living in Seawitch, I organized my life around the same principles many people living in Seawitch did. The most important of those was, when they come for us, we will climb the trees. This one is very old and the origin is unknown. I don't think anyone ever told me about it. When you get to Seawitch, there are certain things you just know. 2. Every night in Seawitch, I slept deeply until I couldn't sleep anymore. I had a feeling that things happened while I was asleep in Seawitch, that my living space, my bed, my lover, all changed in small degrees, an entire revolution until they arrived back where they were before I fell asleep. I also felt as if some nights they didn't make it the full way around. They felt too almost. 3. Everyone in Seawitch used to drown themselves in waves a lot. It was something to do to pass the time, which is a really difficult thing to measure in Seawitch. We found the ocean for this under our beds. The ocean in Seawitch is still there, under all the beds, and all of Seawitch knows they can drown themselves in it at any time, but they don't. They just think about it. 4. At one point, while I was living in Seawitch, we all sat down for a very long time and looked at grass. All of my best memories of Seawitch are from this time, but it had to end eventually. 5. The whole time I was living in Seawitch, I kept a stone in my pocket wrapped in old paper I tore from a book and held together with hair ties. Every night I would wash it in Seawitch's hair and feed it bits of mushroom and herbs, whatever I had around. When I spoke to it, I felt listened to. Before I left Seawitch, I gave this rock to Seawitch as a present, and she ate it, saying, "I will keep it safe here." I wrote her a thank you note and signed it with all of my names. I kissed Seawitch and felt the rock moving inside. When they come for us, we will climb the trees.
There's some really amazing, obviously deeply personal things in there. You can tell, I'm sure you can hear it too, just from your demeanor, how much some of the things are weighing on you. How does Seawitch reflect your own relationship with gender, for example? We'll start there.
I already talked a little bit about the form.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started writing this, I was identifying as a trans woman.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I would call myself agender. I think that gender is something that feels really complicated to me, and I think at some point I realized that while the steps I had taken towards my transition in terms of physical things all seemed right, some of the words and concepts didn't feel right whenever I was identifying as a trans woman. I would walk through a store or in a public place, and I would think about how other people saw me, and did they see me as a woman? And it was very stressful and very frustrating. And sometimes I would have this glimpse where I sort of could imagine myself as I was being seen as a woman, and it felt strange. And it didn't feel like the version of myself that I feel like I am when I'm at home, when I'm with my partner, when I'm with my friends who understand me. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like me. And I think I sort of got to a point where I was like, okay, well, I honestly like trying really, really hard to be seen as a woman by everybody all the time feels like it's a difficult thing. And for people who that is very important, I think it's a worthwhile thing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it didn't feel worthwhile.
Right.
It felt like something that Every gender I could choose for myself feels like a costume to some extent. It feels like aesthetics more than it does. It feels like I wake up one day and I want to put on these clothes and I put on those clothes. And sometimes they're a skirt and sometimes they're like baggy jeans and a band t-shirt. And like, you know, and it's like, it doesn't, it's sometimes I want to shave and sometimes I don't want to shave. And like, it just feels like, oh, what's a cool look I can have today? What fits my mood? You know, it doesn't feel like it has anything at all to do with like my identity or my sense of self. It doesn't, which like, you know, it's gender presentation. It doesn't. But also I think that on a, like, even when it came to like pronouns, it was kind of like, well, you know, like being called she doesn't feel super important to me, like and if I don't know, it kind of, I think at this point I'm kind of like, whatever, like you can't misgender me, you can't like like you can't find something that is any more wrong than anything else is gonna be, because none of it fits. And so that's what being agender feels like to me.
That makes sense.
And I just talked about gender and not my book, but...
well, I asked about gender and not your book, necessarily. You asked
about both, to be fair. You asked about both. And I think Sea Witch is kind of... A lot of it is sort of fighting with these different concepts and sort of... I'm going to be really gay for a second and talk about astrology. Yes. But so, like, I was reading about... some house that something in my chart is in. And it said like you're gonna spend your whole life trying to like defy any single category you ever get put in. It's kind of true. And I feel like this book is like sort of a reflection of me refusing to compromise every single turn, even on the smallest thing. And so it's got me, from the first two pieces, I'm redefining words. Right. You know, I'm sort of saying, well, you think sex is this, but in Sea Witch, sex is this.
Right.
And it's a little bit different and has some things in common with the thing you're talking about, but that you think I'm talking about, but it has some things that are different. And like, the whole book is sort of me refusing to compromise, me redefining where I need to, me trying to write something that feels as true as possible and letting it be contradictory. I think at some point in Sea Witch I say this, and if I don't, I probably will at some point in Sea Witch in a book that's not published yet. But like one of my catchphrases is like, contradiction is holy.
I like that.
So yeah. It's all very confused because I am all very confused.
I think that that's kind of the general state of the world, and anyone that tells you otherwise is full of crap.
Yeah, true.
You mentioned in one of the volumes, so you just released volume 2.
Yes.
How many volumes of Sea Witch can we expect?
4.
4 total.
Ooh. I didn't have an answer for that for a long time, and now I do, and it's 4.
Ooh.
You heard it here.
Okay. You heard it, Portland. And elsewhere. There are people all over the place listening, I reckon. Okay. So, why don't you give us another piece of the book, and I'll find more gems to chat with you about.
Where are we at in terms of... Do I need to be moving on to volume 2?
Not quite yet.
Okay, cool. I'm going to read another one from volume 1, then. I just didn't want to run out of time to include volume 2 in our readings. Okay, so this one is called Sea Witch 24. So these have numbers on the titles. The numbers don't mean anything. they're vaguely in order.
Vaguely.
And then gradually the numbers turn into... The titles are fun. I had a lot of fun with the titles. Gradually the numbers just sort of... I skip numbers, a lot of numbers. Like it goes... to 99 like very fast, and then like there's just like question marks and symbols instead of numbers, and then there become whole sentences instead of numbers.
Cool.
And then it's like almost whole like mini poems instead of numbers. Okay, so this is Sea Witch 24. Oh, and this one has some sexual stuff in it, so you know, like, be ready for that.
Consent is sexy.
Yeah. Sea Witch 24. All of my strength is found in Sea Witch. Her name means longing. I hold her in my arms the way she held me forever since I have first come to live inside her. On the fourth day after my arrival in her person, I woke up to find a pit at the foot of my bed, filled 15 feet deep with rotting dresses. It was early enough that Sea Witch was still asleep, and so I looked into it and prayed to Meteor, may she lay us waste, as is customary upon waking in Sea Witch. Meteor, may she lay us waste, prayed back to me and asked me what this pit was here for. She prayed to me, asking what I planned to use it for. I don't know, I prayed back. It smells. Questions. 1. If I dive headfirst into a pit that is filled 15 feet deep with dresses, what will happen to my neck? 2. If I don't dive in, what will happen to my neck? 3. Is it possible to have sex with a meteor god? May she lay us waste. 4. Is it possible to do so via prayer? Just in case, I took my underwear off, which I had slept in. What are you doing right now? I prayed to Meteor. May she lay us waste. Oh, not much, she prayed back. I got this CD, she prayed to me. Oh yeah, I prayed back. What is it? Some band, she prayed to me. They're called Girls with Assholes. Cool, I prayed. I love Girls with Assholes. Yeah, she prayed. Me too. I giggled. I wish you were here right now, I prayed. You would be dead if I were there, Meteor, may she lay us waste, prayed back. I know, but we could have sex, I prayed. We can have sex now. I felt her prayer on my skin. Questions. 1. What if I am bad at this? 2. How do I know if it's my turn? 3. Should I have sex inside the pit of rotting dresses? 4. What is Sea Witch doing right now? 5. What are the names of the members in the band Girls with Assholes? 6. What if we're both bottoms? She prayed to ask if it was okay if she came inside me. Her flat affect was adorable. I washed my hands in the dresses and prayed back to her. You are always inside me, I prayed. Holy are you, my God, I prayed. Holy are you, my God, she prayed back. We took our turns from there, pushing skin aside and braiding hair. I made my sounds on her, all of my closest, and she gave me her prayers from her place among the stars. I set the dresses on fire and sweated in their heat. I kept my sweat for Meteor, may she lay us waste, and we had there a communion of fluids. She cried out loud, and the stars watched and winked at our soft assholes. We prayed back and forth apart from time. We spent ourselves enough, but never enough, and sat in our silence. I found my thoughts drifting to Sea Witch, who never woke, but slept soundly all through. Holy are you, my God, I thought.
Ooh. Wow. There's some sexy things happening there inside Sea Witch. My yeah. goodness. That's yeah. what she said? I'm not sure. So, in the previous excerpt, mm-hmm. there was a line that said, and all of my names.
Yeah.
This is particularly
relevant
about you. Yeah. yeah. This is perfect to bring up. So tell me about the two different names that I'm seeing on the covers of volumes 1 and 2. Variations.
So I've published 5 books, and I've never published 2 books under the same name.
Okay.
Part of this is because I like changing my name a lot. And part of this is because once I realized that was true, I had to keep it going.
Right.
So for Sea Witch, though, I'm limiting myself a little bit. And I'm keeping Moss Angel as part of the name for all of them. Mm-hmm. So Sea Witch Volume 1 is the author is credited to Moss Angel Witch Monster. Mm-hmm. And Sea Witch Volume 2 is credited to Moss Angel the Undying.
What about your other books?
So before that, Careful Mountain came out last year, was credited to Sarah June Woods. Mm-hmm. And then before that, Sarah the Existence of Fire was credited to Sarah Woods. And then before that was my first book, which was credited to my dead name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't need to talk about that.
We're not going
to. Do you have ideas of what the names for 3 and 4 are going to be? Who will have written them?
Volume 3 is probably going to be Moss Hope Angel.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I like the name Hope.
4 is yet to be determined.
4 is yet to be determined. There's actually a line in a piece in Sea Witch Volume 2 that says, it is tradition in Sea Witch to have frequent and increasingly complicated renamings.
Oh, cool.
also true of most of the trans people I know.
That sounds about right for a lot of my trans friends, actually.
Yeah. It's once you do it once, it's kind of like, oh, I can just rename myself. I just thought of another cool name. I'm just going to use it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
It sounds a little bit addictive, like tattooing. I know you have a specifically personal relationship with tattooing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how it relates to the book?
Sure. So tattooing is a big part of my artistic practice. It's a big part of my like occult magical practice. I do tattoos on mostly on myself, occasionally on like close friends. I'm not a trained tattoo artist. You can buy a tattoo machine on Amazon. You can also just buy tattoo needles and start sticking poking yourself, which is what I started doing. And then eventually after doing that for months and months and months and tattooing a lot of things on myself, got a tattoo machine and slowly taught myself to use it.
Awesome.
And, it's been really fun. It's a fun, thing to dive into. And, it's there's a lot of symbols, like sigils that hold importance to me, that are created, and a lot of them interact with things that I wrote in Sea Witch. And so there are a lot of I have a Sea Witch tattoo, but the thing is I don't even know what I would call a Sea Witch tattoo because so many of my tattoos that are part of my magical practice, I've taken pictures of and put in the Sea Witch books. And so what is for Sea Witch and what is a thing that I made separate of it that I then connected with Sea Witch by putting it in Sea Witch, it's all one thing. At this point, it all bleeds into each other. My tattooing bleeds into my writing. My visual art bleeds into my writing because the books are full of all kinds of things, not just text.
Oh, so they're multimedia then? The pictures of tattoos. What else could we find in Sea Witch?
So Volume 2 has a comic in it.
Oh, cool.
One of the things that I like doing is I have a lot of, there's selfies in there. There are semi-naked to kind of more than semi-naked photos of myself in there. It's like, basically it's like I compiled all these things sort of from things that I thought looked interesting, things that I liked, things that I had, that I had pictures that I had taken for different reasons, and sort of put them all together with this text and laid it out. I'm also a graphic designer, so I designed all the books.
Oh, cool.
So that's another element of my like visual sort of approach to this. And then once it's all done, I go through and I use the tool in InDesign where you can literally just like take a paintbrush and just like draw on the thing. And I scribble all over the books and I deface them before they go to print. And so there I will literally like put a thing in the book and then scribble it out. that is another big part of how I envisioned this book working genre-wise in being like a genre queer work, is that it's literally the only genre I can come up with for this thing is book. and that's kind of what I wanted, is like, right. Like a lot of my favorite comic artists that are go in the like way more artsy sort of comic direction, that it's like really you're like buying a book that has been designed from the very front cover to the very back cover, and every inch of it is part of the art. And that's what I wanted to create. I wanted to create books where every inch of it was part of the art. And as a like book designer, I was very excited about doing that with my own work. So, cool. And it's all very messy because all of my art's very messy.
Right.
Because that's my experience of the world. Right.
Well, I was going to say that sounds apt for art. I feel like life is really messy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, I don't have to get too good at any one thing.
Right. Which is helpful.
Right.
I really enjoy that.
Yeah, no, it's give yourself a break. Like, just make some art.
Awesome. Well, Moss, before we talk more about Sea Witch Volume 2 and hear an excerpt from that, yeah, I'm going to take this moment to remind everyone that KBOO's membership drive is happening, and you can give a call to Voice of God. Do you know the phone number that people would call?
They would call me, and I'm no longer Voice of God. I think I got demoted.
So. You got demoted? Are you just like the hand servant, or...?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, hand servant of God.
503-231-8187 is the number they would call, and they would talk to the hand servant of God.
Awesome.
To take all their information down if they wish to support Talking Earth and this beautiful show you've put together.
Ah, thanks, hand servant of God. I'm. You know, it just doesn't have the same ring as Voice of God.
Okay, fine. You can call me Voice of God.
Well, Patrick, the voice of God over there, will be happy to field calls if you need to give them to help support KBOO. Also, if you have any events that you would like us to share on Talking Earth, you can feel free to reach out to me, Camille Rose Perry, or the voice of God himself, Patrick Bocard, and we'll do our best to get him on air.
I actually got invited to an event.
Ooh.
On September 22nd.
Ooh.
At 7 p.m., there's Woman Writers Against Trump at Ford Food and Drink at 7 p.m.
Awesome.
Just wanted to mention that. And and nobody invited me to anything else until next month.
Well, shoot. Well, I would suggest to folks, if you're looking for a great open mic and a chance to hear some amazing writers, definitely on Monday nights down at the Big Legrowski downtown, 6 p.m., there is a great show called The Dudes Poetry Society. Is that what they're calling it now?
Yes, that is.
The Dudes Poetry Society. They've got a great open mic. They've got a really cool community of people. Amanda and Curtis will warmly welcome you at the door. And you might even see myself or Patrick down there one of these times.
I was there last week.
Awesome. I featured there a couple of weeks ago. It was a really awesome time. But... All right. Again, let us know if you want to support KBOO. Get in touch with us at a different time if you have an event that you would like us to share. Now we're going to go back to Moss Angel and hear something from Sea Witch Volume 2.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I wanted to give a little heads up on this one because it has some references to... some mental illness and suicide attempts and things like that that are pretty heavy. So I'm going to get into it, but I just wanted anybody to know, if you have a sensitivity to hearing about that sort of thing, maybe take a little break for a second.
Cool. Thank you for the caveat.
Yeah. This one is titled Trans Memoir, Both Mess, Dog Together, 5 milligrams per milliliter. I told you the titles get fun. Me and Dead Name found a loophole in the company's policy that allowed us to stay in the motel for years without paying with the pain of our bodies in labor. The loophole was that the room was haunted by the ghost of a very broken girl I once knew early in my formation. The undead counted as negative and the broke girl as double, so our room balanced out to unoccupied. The girl didn't declare her presence, but I found Dead Name's eyes looked more like hers as time passed. I found Zier voice using broken words, her broken words, her accent. Not that this actually happened. Not to Dead Name, anyway. I was the one being haunted, not Zim. My ears, my eyes. I woke up in my bed, neck deep in my old pain resurrected. More pain than the years of labor we would have paid from our bodies for the room. I woke up in my bed and saw nothing but pain. I knew Dead Name was in here somewhere. The room kept changing sizes, but I could smell Zier hair through it all. "Z hates you," the broken girl whispered. I went inside the bathroom, but found I wasn't tall enough to reach the medicine cabinet. I was smaller than the sink. I was sinking. 2. The motel became the center of our operations. We stayed there long term, years or minutes, whichever is longer. We fell in love. We fell in love. I fell in love with Dead Name. Z fell in love with me. So Z said. I mean, I believed Zim. I mean, Z wanted me around. I started feeling trapped. I mean, I felt like Z was trapping me, but Z loved me. It reminded me of something. I loved Zim. Z reminded me of someone. I felt kidnapped. I would make Zim sad if I left the motel without Zim right beside me. Z told me this, I think. I found Zim passed out on the bathroom floor, but that never happened. I called the paramedics and said the words "too many pills," but that never happened. This is too traumatic. I'm sorry, I told Zim. I'm sorry. We loved each other. I loved Zim. Z was so gentle to me. Z understood it, right? Z always understood. 3. It's my bone death, I told Zim. It eats you. When you speak, it eats your words. I took my bone death out and held it in my arms. You don't love me, Dead Name told me. Could you say that again? I asked Zim. I said I love you, Z said. I'm having a hard time understanding you, I said. I'm hearing things wrong. I frowned. You hate me, Dead Name spat at me. I threw my bone death against the wall. What the fuck is wrong with you, Bone Death said in Dead Name's voice. We are gonna have to pay for that, I said. It's okay, Dead Name said. I picked my bone death up from the floor. It was swollen and tender. I'm sorry, I said, through the buzzing in my skull. I said, I guess I'm not sure who I'm talking to. 4. We don't have to stay in the motel, Dead Name said. Nobody said we had to stay in the motel. 5. The closet of the motel room was filled with weapons we hadn't seen before. All kinds. Powerful ones.
I really like the way that you allude to these things, but don't necessarily directly state them. What was your intention in doing that? Just still the genre-defying sort of idea, or?
More so that I'm trying to describe. I'm trying to describe real things that actually happen but are very hard to talk about. Mm. And I'm trying to describe them in ways that feel real to me. Mm. And, you know, like, this isn't a autobiographical, but it's definitely touching very strongly on, like, personal experiences I've had. Mm-hmm. And it is, especially when you're writing about mental illness and psychosis, which are things that I've experienced, it becomes really difficult to talk about without in a way that feels real, that feels like it holds the feelings that those experiences hold, when you're just sort of explaining it in a prosaic kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think I have to write in this way that touches and then comes sort of steps back and then touches on it and then steps back. Mm-hmm. That particular piece, I started out writing the different numbered points as retellings of the exact same thing. Mm. And ended up being just different enough that it feels like I ended up with, and I ended up deciding I wanted to extend things through multiple bullet points, and it ended up with an effect that I really liked, which was this sort of confusion of time, and sort of like you get a scene, you don't know what order they're in, you don't know if they're taken out of order, but these are these scenes and they're sort of stacked together here for you to sort of put together in an emotional way. Mm-hmm. That feels emotionally real rather than factually real.
I really like that about your work. It's something that I've noticed throughout a lot of your work over the years that I've known you and heard you read. You tend to reflect things just enough so that the reader gets a glimpse and then back away. Mm-hmm. It makes your very intense experiences very applicable to a lot of people. Super commendable.
I'm glad. Thank you.
You've brought up a couple of times, and you mentioned it in your bio, the mm-hmm. idea of you being a witch.
Yes.
Talk to me about that. Talk to me about how that plays into this mythology that you've created. Talk to me about, you know, you mentioned the sigils and symbols that you create for your practice. I would just like to hear more.
Yeah, so I don't follow any one particular school of magic. My magical practice is very much an intuitive one. I approach magic very similar to the way I approach art. It's something where I allow myself to create in a way that feels real to me, and to do rituals or create sigils or other things that I sort of see as having a lot of magical power, to create them and interact with them in ways that feel important to me. And to do that very intuitively. I don't have any instruction book. I don't have any list of spells and steps for those spells. It's, you know, it's something I've done for a long time. It's really important to me. And with Sea Witch, I sort of let myself fully let it bleed into everything I was creating. The full series of these books I think of as something that I'm creating, like the writing, the drawing, the designing all feels very much like I'm doing so in a ritual space. Mm. And I very much feel like these books are magical artifacts for me. I think that, you know, I think they have effects that I would call magic. I would call, you know, spiritual and important to me. Other people might call it other things, but that's fine. You know, we're all different people. We all live in different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have different names for things.
Absolutely. I like that approach. You've also mentioned that the work is very political.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel in our current day and age, as lovely as it is, to be creating a work like this, a deeply political, deeply mystical piece of work?
At this point in my life, I'm probably on a million lists already. So it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm just going to do my thing and be like real explicit about it. This is an anti-capitalist, anti-colonialist like piece of literature. This is, you know, maybe even specifically a like anarchist piece of literature. Mm-hmm. And I think that also informs the things I'm doing with structure. It informs the things I'm thinking about when I'm thinking about the world of Sea Witch. And in our current political climate, you know, I'm like scared. you know, there's a lot of things in Sea Witch that sort of reflect that fear as the way things are, you know, being a marginalized person, being a trans person in this climate, it's like scary. Mm-hmm. And being an anti-fascist in this climate is scary, which is weird.
But something we thought we'd never say.
Yeah, right. Right. That's something that has been, I don't know, I can't separate my magic from my queerness and my gender, and I can't separate my magic from my politics, and I can't separate my art from any of it, and it all bleeds into each other, and it's all part of the same thing, and it's all pointing the same way for me. These books are pretty unapologetically. I mean, at the beginning of the book, I have a thing that says, you should absolutely steal this book, and you should definitely like steal other books too, and like just steal stuff. It's great. Like, it's like these books are not like, I don't know. I had a friend who was who's a professor and was going to be teaching Sea Witch Volume 1 in her class. And I was like, yeah, it's cool. Like really cool that you're excited about doing this. And I was like, especially, you know, because like, you know, there's like pictures, like very explicit pictures of my body parts in here, and like, you know, because there's like a thing at the beginning about like, you know, like that's like very anti-cop, and like there's like a thing encouraging people to steal stuff, and like they were kind of like, oh yeah, maybe I can't teach your book.
Oh, no.
And so yeah, they didn't end up, they taught an excerpts from it, but they didn't actually like have students the like buy the, all buy copies of the book. I was like, I shouldn't have said it.
Why did you say it?
But she was like my friend, and I didn't want to get her in trouble. But right. I was like, you know, I was like, oh, it's like really cool that you're like willing to do this, even though all this stuff. And
right.
She's like, and actually, now that you like stack all that up for me, maybe I am not teaching.
Oh no. It's cool that they taught your work anyway. What sort of context was it for?
It was for, I believe it was, I don't know, some class.
Some class.
Some class in Chicago somewhere.
Awesome. I like it. We keep talking about this fabulous book, and you're reading all this great work from it. How do people get a hold of it?
Oh, so the easiest way is to go to my website, which is undying.club.
Okay.
There is a header that says Sea Witch, and it says underneath it, it says subscribe to the Sea Witch Patreon. And that's a link. And you can subscribe to that, and you can get digitally all of Volume 1, Volume 2, and the unreleased Volume 3. You can read it all right then, right after you sign up. And you can give me a couple bucks a month for being subscribed to that. And I will post updates usually every month. This month I took a break. But usually every month I'll be posting updates. And it just costs a couple bucks a month to support me. And you get to read all the new stuff as it comes out.
Awesome.
Then right under the Patreon link, there's two other links. One is for Sea Witch Volume 2, which you can buy in print. And the other is for Sea Witch Volume 1, which you can buy in print. And you can also download for free or for pay. You can like choose your price on it as digital.
Awesome.
So if you only have the money to buy one book, you can buy Sea Witch Volume 2 and then get the PDF of Sea Witch Volume 1 for free and just read it on your phone or your computer or whatever.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a really awesome thing to hear artists that are happy about this the Patreon thing and working to involve their audience in the support of their work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really neat motivating factor for a lot of people to be involved in your artistic process.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up getting onto Patreon, just out of curiosity?
I knew one poet who had a Patreon, and you know, she got like $50 a month from it, and I was like, that's great. I want $50 a month.
Right.
I had been sending my stuff out to literary magazines all the time and was really focused on getting my work out there in that way, which seemed like a little better than like just posting it on my Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a little bit broader audience. But the thing is, when I was publishing in literary magazines, it seemed like, unless it was an online magazine, it seemed like it was kind of going towards the people who were very excited to read it, the people who were following my work very closely. It kind of made it hard for them to get a hold of it and hard to read it.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, and also like, you know, the amount of literary magazines that pay you for publishing in them are sort of few and far between. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, what if I could make sure that the people who definitely wanted to read every single thing I publish can get that, and I make sure that I'm getting paid more than I've ever gotten paid per month in a literary magazine, which isn't a hard goal to reach, right? So it was like, well, cool. That seems like a good idea and like kind of a better model. You know, being the Patreon doesn't create new readers for me, but what it does is it lets the people who are very excited keep up. And that's really cool.
Awesome.
Because it tends to be that I just like throughout the like, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever of making stuff, I've discovered that the people who like my stuff tend to really, really, really like it. And everybody else is kind of like, oh, that's interesting, whatever that is. So,
Do you have one last little short excerpt that you can share with us?
Sure, I can pull something up.
A couple minutes before we have to say goodbye to everybody.
So this one mentions genital surgery. And does so in a way that might be kind of gross to some people.
Okay.
So that's my warning. It's called Bone Death by Mouth, 5 Crystals, Not a Problem. What is it like to be a thing that was built to exist as pure good? Ask Sea Witch. She has a face like slimy wet wood and the words false purity tattooed across her too many knuckles. She did the tattooing herself when she was a girl god. Back then, she used to hang out with a witch god named Moss Witch, who was one of Dog Witch's sisters. Moss Witch had a warm house and a soft bed and sharp needles for writing beneath your own skin. Mosswitch knew all the coolest bands and had art all over the walls that she had made herself. The fucking thing, Mosswitch would say, about art is that it's mostly a bunch of gay shit, which is basically the best. Seawitch would come to Mosswitch's house when she needed a break from attempting to be a being of pure good, which is pretty much always. Did you hear about the girl who fried and ate her own testicles? Mosswitch asked Seawitch. Pan-seared. I was going to do the same when I got mine cut off. I lied to the doctor, saying I needed to have them for religious reasons. Well, not entirely lied. I think eating my own balls would automatically be a spiritual act. Anyway, I told him I was Orthodox fundamentalist something or other, and then I found out I'm getting them in formaldehyde. Poisonous. So much for that. I made earrings instead. I want to throw mine into the sea, like Uranus, Seawitch said. Mosswitch beamed at this, but Seawitch didn't notice, as she was focused on putting the finishing touches on a hand tattoo. It was a very tiny, detailed portrait of a girl who was the most alone person in the world. It showed just the head and shoulders, but you could tell from the look in her eyes that she wanted to die because of how utterly alone she felt. Seawitch finished her eyebrow and showed the completed project to her friend. She looks like you, Mosswitch said.
Ooh-hoo. Thank you so, so much for being here. I'm so excited to see you and hear your work. Check out undying.club to find ways to support Moss and their work. Find more of this reading for yourself. Please call in and support KBOO this week. I am Camille Rose, and this has been Talking Earth.
Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Woods and the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Right now, the following program may contain language and situations not suitable for young audiences. But of course, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Ready to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So ready. You got it.
Good. Okay, we're recording. Here we go.
You're right. I'm stuck. Hold on. Okay.
Good evening and welcome to Gremlin Time. This is Fortunato, and joining me again is Professor Kitty.
Hi. I don't know. I wish I knew how to do a meow. Meow. Is that good?
Meow.
Meow.
Today's story, well, it's the end of summer. It is. It's the summer ends around here.